Welcome back to the Between Dreams podcast. Here today with a returning guest of many times. Today, we're talking about his brand new book, Misdirection, A Magician's Guide to Spotting and Avoiding Manipulation in Your Life. Joining us now is Taylor Hughes.
Hey, thanks for having me, bud. I always love our, we have the best conversations, and every now and then we turn the mics on and record, so I'm glad other folks get to listen.
So let's hear just a quick overview of the book, because it's in an interesting format. There's some cool things that you added into it. So talk a little bit about how the book is set up.
So the whole premise of this project is I've spent my entire life as a professional magician studying how to deceive people for entertainment. But I've seen how the same techniques that we use on stage to kind of distract you, take your watch when you're not looking, get you to look over here so I can do something when you're not looking. Those same techniques have snuck into every other aspect of our life, from how we treat each other in business to what goes on politically, to even how we relate in our neighborhoods and in our churches. And so every chapter I teach you a simple magic trick. And then I talk about how if we're not careful, that same technique can become part of how we interact in these other areas of our life.
Yeah, it's very cool to see that the bridge of that of, you know, we know magicians are doing manipulative things for our right. enjoyment. And it's kind of cool to see that, like, oh, that's actually happening and sometimes not in our best interest.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is when you go to a magic show and you buy a ticket, you kind of sign up for that, right? You know the person on stage, you know, oh, this performer is going to try to trick me. But that's part of it. You sign up for that and you know that they're doing it to give you an experience that you couldn't have otherwise. But we don't always expect to be manipulated when we walk into the office on Sunday, you know, on Monday morning, or when we sit in a pew on Sunday morning, or when we go, you know, to hear a politician speak. And so it's important that we kind of ask these bigger questions. And that's really what the book is about. It's not about getting anyone to think a certain way. It's really just about reminding ourselves that the answers that we need are found in the questions we ask, that that we need to be asking constantly bigger questions about what's going on around us.
Yeah. And I love how you kind of touched on it just now and misdirection in the workplace. And there's different chapters are broken down into kind of different elements of our lives, of things that everyone experiences. So let's touch on that. The misdirection in the workplace is where most people spend most of their time, you know, going to work every day. So that one's going to be, you know, so impactful for a lot of people. There's the idea of the illusion of input in the workplace. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the illusion of input in a magic show. And again, the secrets that I'm giving away are not anything that's going to keep you from enjoying a magic show. You'll still be able to go and enjoy a show. And hopefully it makes you love theatrical magic even more. But one of the things that happens in a show is a magician has this ability through various different techniques to give you the idea that you made a free choice on your own, when in reality, you made the choice that performer had decided ahead of time they needed you to make to create this experience. And in the office, a lot of times this will happen. You know, how many times do you walk into a meeting at work where the idea is we're going to have a brainstorming session or we want to get everyone's feedback or input on something, and the person leading that meeting has already determined what they need the outcome to be? And so we can sometimes, if we're not careful, get in a situation where we're being presented that this is the outcome can change. It's like a choose your own adventure based on what we bring up and what happens. We really want to get the team's input. But if we're not careful, especially as leaders in organizations and in businesses, we can be giving this idea that people's input matters, when in reality, we're just having the meeting to justify the actions we already want to take. And so I explain kind of a simple way of how magicians could do that in a show. And then we really get into how that can happen in the workplace. And it's not just about not wanting to be misdirected from others, but also taking responsibility for ourselves that we're not doing that to the people that are around us, that we're really valuing people's opinion and realizing that, you know, just because we think we know the right way to go about something, the answer you need might come from someone who's in that room who you would totally miss this great opportunity if you didn't really value and trust that people were bringing unique perspectives. So that's the illusion of input that I see a lot in workplaces, not just that I've been a part of, but also as a performer and traveling, I kind of get to see how corporations interact and work amongst each other. And it's a thing that unfortunately happens quite a bit and goes unnoticed.
I can only imagine in the bigger the corporations and companies, how much that happens, because I just see it in myself even doing that of like, you know, wanting my own way and framing up the world to kind of go my way. And it's like, right, when I pull back from that and allow those the actual inputs to happen, you're like, oh, I actually was willing to see something a little bit different. And it is always more beneficial. I think that's relevant to so, you know, from the individual creator type entrepreneur up to, you know, whatever level you are in a major company, is like, that is just across the board.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like I said, this book is all about continuing to ask questions. You know, when you're a little kid, and you ever watch a little kid learning how to tie their shoes? Hmm. When a little kid's learning how to tie their shoes, the level of intensity and focus as they make the little bunny ear and it goes around the tree and through the loop and all that, there's so much intention behind it. But then every one of us as adults put our shoes on today. We didn't think twice about it. We're probably doing 14 different things while we were tying our shoes, because at a certain point, you take something you're learning and you're discovering, and then you move it to the category of, I got it all figured out, right? And that's fine when it comes to something like tying your shoes and you go, I don't have to think about that anymore. What gets dangerous is when, as people in business or neighbors or family members, we start to go, well, I already know everything I need to know about this situation, this person, this way of doing business. And that's when growth stops. So again, that's one of the ways that not only can we be a victim of manipulation from someone else, but we can fool ourselves into thinking that we've got it all figured out. And the more we can get to this state of, I don't have all the answers, it keeps us open to learning and to growing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right, there's a if there's a lesson to put print out and put on the morning mirror, it's in there. That's so good. So within the workplace, the misdirection in the workplace, you talk a little bit about this another idea, labeling people. Dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, so a lot of times in workplace environments, the way we do team building and we want to work on communication, a lot of the times we end up finding a personality test or a understanding kind of how people default, right? To there's things like the Myers-Briggs test that you can do to see like, oh, is this person like normally an extrovert or an introvert? There's, you know, in other spaces, especially in the church, they would use something like the Enneagram, which is a very ancient kind of personality profile. And those are great to understand yourself better and to understand other people better. But what can happen if we're not careful is we start to label people, and you don't want to use a tool that's meant to help you to understand someone. You don't want to use that as a weapon against them. And what can happen, unfortunately, is we go like, oh, this person's an extrovert, so we can't give them anything of heavy responsibility. Or this person, man, they're just really kind of serious. So we can't encourage them to be in customer service and connecting with someone. And so it's great to understand and to grow and to do these type of tests to learn each other, learn more about each other. But what we don't want to do is label people. And if you think about it, you know, in my house, my wife and I, we like to have a place for everything, you know, like you want to organize. And so we have a little bin for batteries and all the batteries go in that bin. And then when you need a battery, you go, I know where to go find it. It's in the battery bin. And we kind of do this in life. We want to put everything in a place so we know how to understand, you know, how to move through life and find the things we need. But what happens, unfortunately, is we do the same thing with people. And we go, these people are smart. These people are foolish. These people are wise. You know, these are ones that I can learn something from. These are trustworthy people. These are scary people. And that's a survival instinct that we do as humans. You know, we want to make sure we're safe. But when it comes to business environments and working with one another, how quickly do we get into the situation where we just write off Ted from accounting? Ugh, it's just Ted. You know how Ted is. And if we don't give people an opportunity to change and to grow and for us to get to know them from a different perspective, then we're missing out on great, not only great relationships, but it's affecting how we do business and what we accomplish. Because if you don't trust your team, and if you don't, you don't fully know what people are capable of or give them opportunities to show what they're capable of, where everyone's missing out.
Yeah, it reminds me of the kind of idea of like horoscopes of like, you know, oh, in the newspaper, oh, I'm a Scorpio. It says today I'm going to face a major obstacle in my life. Like, you know, you tell right. anybody that first thing in the morning, you know what they're going to go, you know what kind of day they're going to have. They're going to go like subconsciously create problems for themselves. So it's like a funny, it's like, you know, that self-fulfilling prophecy type of thing yes. of that. Yeah, you package something that was, oh, I'm supposed to be, like you said, using this to learn more about myself, and then, you know, it becomes a weapon against you. Of it's crazy. And that's like,
for sure.
I think that's happening a lot with just like so many of it, specifically of the personality profiling things happening. I know I just like different like groups that I've been in, you know, it's like mandatory, and then you get it like gets added to your like profile mm-hmm. in places, and like, or like on a name tag at an event.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that's like almost intrusive to, you know, some stuff. So it's crazy.
Yeah. And again, it's these can all be great tools, and there's appropriate ways to use them. But we tend to like go quickly from, oh, this could be interesting, and it's something that we're pursuing, like a personality says, oh, we're going to pursue this because we want to get to understand people better. And once we've done it, now when the next group comes in, it's like we're just checking boxes. Mm-hmm. We're just going like, ah, I got to find out what Jenkins is so I know how to react to him, or, you know, and we don't want to allow tools to become weapons. And again, that's, you know, magicians use these tools all the time, but they're using it to give you something, and misdirection in any other environment is taking something from you. It's robbing you of something. It's not giving you elation or joy or, you know, perspective. So.
Yeah, that's great. So that, I think that kind of frames us up nicely to shift into another chapter, the social media chapter, this illusion of connection that you talk about within the social media section. How's that tie into it?
Yeah. So with the illusion of connection, you know, sometimes what can happen is, you know, we start collecting people online. You know, I met this person and they're great. You know, we had a great, you know, one night talking to each other after a convention or whatever. And then you become friends on Facebook. And then what happens is, rather than having genuine, deep relationships, we, you know, you think about a person and you go like, hey, I wonder what that person's up to, rather than calling them to check on them. Rather than saying like, let's grab lunch, rather than like, hey, let's jump on a Zoom and just like see what's going on in life. What we do is we go to their Facebook page or their Instagram page and we stalk them, right? like we go like, oh, I don't need to check on anyone because I know what they're doing. And then take it a step further, we're all sharing all the time a version of our lives, but it's very hard to get an accurate picture. So sometimes you hear about someone who went through something or there's a tragedy and you go like, wow, they seem so happy. How could that happen? I think if we're not careful, this illusion of connection, the idea of friends, but they're not, they're more acquaintances, or they're people that you become, rather than a participant in someone's life, you become a spectator of their life. And so I think I've seen it done both ways, and I've seen social media be an incredible tool. I don't think that our interaction online is a negative. I think that if we forget that it is supposed to be, you know, social relationships and not just observing and promoting, we're missing out on how great of a thing this really can be.
Yeah, I've felt that on both sides, kind of like incoming and outgoing of seeing my friends, especially entertainers and performers, always posting the coolest things. And then I actually talk to them and they're going through something. You're like, oh, man, I thought you were like,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Right.
And then same thing with me. I've had people be like, oh, you're crushing it. I've seen this thing. Meanwhile, I'm like, you know, on my last straw and trying to pay bills or something. And people like, because I crafted an illusion that made it look like I was crushing it. And, you know, you're kind of, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, there is, and that's the thing, another thing that I talk about in the book, that something we need to remember is that we're seeing a version, right? Like when you go on, you know, your social media is curated based on the algorithm, based on what you like and what you don't like and your past, you know, comments and all of that. And so what happens is when you go online and you look on Instagram, you're not seeing what everyone sees on Instagram. You know, it's not like back in the day when someone printed up a newspaper, it's like, hey, did you see this in the paper? Everyone was looking at the same thing. And there's this idea in magic that's a great tool for a magician on stage, this idea of dual reality, where I can hold up a playing card and I say, go ahead and memorize the card. And the person on stage is memorizing the card, but they don't realize it's a double-faced card. So the audience is looking at the three of hearts. This person's looking at the ten of spades. And everybody thinks they're looking at the same thing. And so then it becomes interesting where we don't understand, how did you come to that conclusion? Because clearly you saw what I saw. But the truth is we're all seeing our own version of the internet and social media. And so it's important to engage in like one-on-one conversation. And so one of the things I talk about in the book, every chapter ends with some questions to ask or some things you might want to consider. And one of the things is like, hey, the next time you wonder about someone, maybe then instead of just scrolling their page, give them a call, shoot them a text. That personal connection, that is how we get to know each other, right? That one-on-one, looking in the face, sharing stories, talking about your week. Those are the things that we kind of miss when we're just looking at the highlight reel, and we miss out on what our interaction really is supposed to be, because we've got this idea that we've already done it. We check the box. Yeah, I already checked in with so-and-so. And then you realize like, oh, I feel like I see this person all the time. I haven't been in a room with them in 2 years.
Yeah.
And, so that's, again, I don't want, and the book is really leans into hope and encouragement and showing, you know, what could happen if we do it a different way. So again, I don't want to sound like a crotchety old guy going like, oh, it's the social media ruining the youth. No, I don't think so. You know, my 18-year-old daughter has like this very deep and rich community of other artists and people on Instagram that support one another. And like, they take it from just what's on the page and they use that as an opportunity to reach out and to connect and to build a relationship. And I think it's beautiful. And I think that, rather than, you know, as adults, us looking at a generation and going like, well, this is the problem. No, actually, I think we can learn a lot by kind of looking and seeing a different way to interact.
Yeah, it sounds, I kind of, as you were going through that, it was like on one side of the balance, as it's off balance, is right. Assumptions and, you know, kind of like projecting our ideas into situations. And on the other side of that balance is communication and effective communication. So it's like, okay, the assumptions that we're all making by looking at the other people, and in it, not just in the social media thing, but in all of it, you know, the assumption that other people see the world that as we do, going back to that, you know, the dual reality concept, there's a lot of that in there. And I think that's sometimes how we maybe misdirect ourselves in a way of making assumptions instead of asking a question or checking in with somebody or whatever, you know, part that fits into.
Yeah. And just really, I think so. It's interesting because I feel like in most areas of our life, we approach it with intent. We have a plan. When it comes to your career, you got a plan. You know, you might change that plan, but you know, okay, this year I'm going to work on these things. And this is kind of my plan. You got a plan for your health, and you've got a plan for your relationships, and you've got a plan for your, like every other area of our life, we approach with a lot of intention. And then with social media, we tend to just go on there aimlessly and whatever I get shown, I see, and whatever, you know what I mean? Rather than being intentional. And so I think that if we could approach social media with the same intentionality that we would, if we knew, hey, I'm going to this party and I'm going to hang out with my friends. What am I, you know, what, how are you walking into the room? I think if you think about that with the same intention when you go online, then you don't just go like, how did I spend 3 hours doing nothing? And I feel bad and I don't feel connected.
Yeah, you have a story kind of like tying in the magic and misdirection into all of it. You have a story about stealing watches that kind of ties this together. Can you share a little without maybe not spoiling the entire thing, but kind of touch on
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I, one of the things that I've done for years on stage for entertainment, and I always give them back, but I steal watches off spectators. So I'll, you know, use three or four people in the show. And at the end of the show, sometimes I'll give back their watches that they didn't know I had taken during the process of our experience. And so through doing this over years, I noticed, because there are stealing someone's watch, taking a watch off someone's wrist is a very, I don't know if gutsy is the right word, but you have to really just, there's some steps you have to take to make it work. And I started to notice as I would go online and waste so much time on the internet being, you know, unintentional and go like, where did the time go today? And I was just scrolling. I noticed, oh, the same thing that I do as a magician to steal your time off your wrist is the same thing that happens to me when I go online and I go, where did the time go? And the first step, if you want to steal someone's watch, is you have to entertain them, right? Usually I go online for entertainment. I go on there to see a funny clip someone sent me or, you know, to learn about a new convention coming up that I'm excited about. And I want to see who the speakers are, right? So you go on there for entertainment. And then once you're entertained, there's a shift that happens. In a show, if I want to steal your watch, I got to entertain you. That lets your guard down. And then I need to kind of put you on the spot. Like in a magic show, this is not as negative as it sounds, but I need to make you a little insecure, because if I bring you on stage instantly, just by bringing someone out of an audience onto a stage with spotlights, now all of their attention is on, I don't want to mess this up. And so if I can get you to think, okay, I got to really pay attention. They're focusing on me and what I'm saying and what I'm having them do. And they're not paying as much attention to what else is going on around them, because they're worried about screwing up, right? And I noticed that the shift for me when I start going from being intentional online to wasting time is usually when I start to feel a little insecure. I see that post that's like, oh, you should be this weight instead of the weight you are. Or maybe you need some hair dye for your gray hair or whatever, like, right? So like you start to see someone else who seems like they're doing better than you. And that insecurity plays in your mind. And then before you know it, now you're researching, you know, a new diet and exercise, like all these things. And so I kind of walk through all the steps of stealing someone's watch, but also just as a way of giving you some questions to think about as you're being intentional online, so you don't waste your time and go like, ah, that was kind of pointless, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Another one that as you're talking through it, you're just like, you know, everyone listening and hearing that will just be running through all of the relevant things that they've, you know, done to, you know, waste that time. So I think another really cool part about this is not, you kind of touched in that on the social media element. It's not you just being like, oh, I'm complaining about social media.
Right.
There's enough of that
yeah.
happening. And it can be a tool. And it's just like, okay, we're going to be aware
Yep.
of how it can be used for good and aware of how it can be maybe in a manipulative way. And then, so it's like a potentially dangerous direction to start talking about politics
yeah.
in any sense. But you didn't go in, you know, it's not about in this case, in the book, it's not about, you know, one side versus the other or anything like that mm-hmm. or polarizing in any way. But just being aware of just like this is like social media isn't good or bad.
Right.
You know, one side isn't good or bad. So talk about how you kind of address the idea of politics. Very
yeah.
important for, you know, everyone, especially, you know, the currently it's hot right now.
It's a wild year.
yeah. So how did you kind of address that without, you know, making it about politics?
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. Speak. Again, like I said, the book is not trying to talk anyone into or out of any belief system that they have that adds value to their life and makes them care about others. That's beautiful. And it is not what I realized. Misdirection is not a issue. Like we were just talking about social media. It's not like young people are being misdirected and old people aren't, or old people are being misdirected and young people aren't. It's the same thing. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It is a human issue. Like if somebody can a lot of times you'll find out that it goes back to money, right? Like if I can make money by manipulating you, people tend to go that route. A big thing that I talk about, again, it comes back to seeing different perspectives. Like I said before, we tend to like with our shoes, we go like, oh, I know how to tie my shoes. I don't need to think about that anymore. And when it comes to thinking politically or in any other area of life, a good question to ask is when was the last time I changed my mind about something that was important, right? When I was a kid, my dad loved Chevy cars. And because he loved Chevy cars, he would teach me about Chevys. And he would explain to me, you know, how you could tell the difference. You could tell the year of a 1950s Chevy based on the shape of the taillight. And, you know, he would just talk about how great they are. Now, I also knew my dad hated Fords. I didn't know anyone that drove a Ford when I was a kid. I didn't ever ride in a Ford. But because my dad disliked Fords and he loved Chevys, I kind of just adopted that same belief of Chevys are great, Fords are awful. And then later on in life, I rode a couple Fords and I was like, it's pretty good cars. Nothing wrong with these cars, right? And sometimes, unfortunately, what happens is we do the same thing as humans when it comes to our political views, is we tend to just adopt, and it's not always the viewpoint of our parents. Sometimes it's the viewpoint of a radio host or a podcast host that we love, and we tend to just go like, rather than think for myself, rather than weigh out the issues and see all the different perspectives, I'm going to find one person who I think is great, and I'm just going to believe whatever they believe. And so sometimes what can happen is we start to feel like, well, this is what I really think about this issue, when in reality, we haven't thought much about that issue at all. We've just kind of adopted a team. You know, this happens in sports with sports teams all the time. And granted, I shouldn't talk about sports. I'm not a sports guy, which you knew immediately when you saw me. But the one thing that's interesting about sports is we tend to go like, well, this is my team and these are my guys and I got to support my guys. And what we don't think about is that the guys on that team are not always on that team because they love the city, because that's the team they wanted to be on. Sometimes it's like, well, they were going to give me the most money to go on this team, or this was the opportunity I got, you know, but we will fight each other over sports. You're bad and I'm good because my team colors are this and your team colors are that. And it's fun and it's silly when it comes to sporting events. It's detrimental when it comes to groups of people or ways of thinking, or realizing that just because someone has a different experience than I had growing up doesn't mean that they're necessarily a bad person or that I'm right and they're wrong. And another thing that we talk about in the politic chapter of the book is a good question to ask yourself is, do my beliefs about what is right and what is wrong, do they just happen to benefit my life, right? Like if your beliefs about what is good and what is right and what is true and how we should treat one another also happen to really benefit you financially, that's something to think about, right? It's just interesting to me how often, whether this is politically or religiously or, and you know, how we treat each other in our communities, that what we believe is like the ultimate, like 100% truth just so happens to benefit my life in every way. And I do feel like if you're on a quest for truth, there should be some truths that are not convenient for you. There should be some truths that are, now it sounds like I'm making a statement about that. What was that document? Inconvenient truth or something? But there should, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is there should be some things that cost you, right? Right? Doing the right thing is often sacrificial. Mm-hmm. And so if your belief about how we should care for one another just so happens to make sure that you have a ton of money in the bank all the time, and it never costs you anything, I do think that that's pretty ironic. And so whenever I've gotten in a situation in life where I've been like, oh, it just so happens to make my life easier to think this way, I have to go like, well, do I believe this because it's the right thing to do? Or do I believe this because believing that makes life easier for me every day? So I think those are some questions that we can ask when it comes to, you know, what we're supporting, whether that be political candidates or things that we vote for. I think that sometimes if we're not careful, we end up just voting for what serves us rather than what serves humanity as a whole.
Yeah, and I think that is something that people may not even be consciously aware of in a way, because
right.
Going all the way back to, you know, oh, my dad said, you know, whatever, you know, only drove a Chevy, or
yeah.
said Republicans are this or Democrat,
yeah.
or whatever it is, that, and they don't know, you know, it's like you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when, and full circle, sometimes we make assumptions like, oh, how could someone think this or believe this or not understand my perspective?
Right.
And we just don't know. And
yeah.
it goes back to assumptions, lack mm-hmm. of communication, and then circle it back into, there's a section about misdirecting ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what happens a lot of times. Sometimes these things aren't even, you know, a lot of times it's consciously people deceiving us and, you know,
right.
making decisions and things that are, you know, purposefully, you know, bad. We'll say it. But then sometimes we're doing things that we might not even know, or mm-hmm. consciously or subconsciously misdirecting ourselves. As we go into this idea of misdirecting ourselves, you talk a little bit about the idea of happiness as a destination. So jump into that.
Yeah. I mean, again, a lot of the things in this book are not me going, I'm an expert at this and I'm going to teach you. These are things I've noticed in my own life. And I've struggled with, and I've had to wrestle with. And it's interesting when you spend your whole life studying how to deceive people to catch yourself being deceived by your own ways of thinking. Mm. And the idea of happiness as a destination is huge. You know, we can, if we're not careful, we can be so looking ahead, thinking that down the road's going to be great. I'll be happy when I get there. And then you get there and you're like, oh, but I just need to go a little further and then I'll be really happy. And so, yeah, this whole idea of like learning to be where your feet are and be present and be happy with whatever your circumstance is, you know, your circumstance, joy and challenge can coexist. It's not like joy or hope or happiness is a destination you get to. It's something you carry with you through good times and challenging times and victories and failures. And so there's a whole section in the book on how we can learn to not misdirect ourselves by thinking that like, oh, I'll be happy someday, but it's like something that happens to you rather than a mindset and a way of being in the process of whatever is going on.
Yeah. In the same section there's a, it's a mouthful. Fundamental yeah. attribution error. So talk a little bit about that in the misdirecting ourselves and how that relates. I think that ties into a lot of things in workplace and,
yeah.
Again, back to assumptions. So in the
yeah.
misdirecting ourselves idea specifically in fundamental attribution error.
Yeah. So fundamental attribution error is when we basically attribute what we do to circumstances around us. And we attribute what other people do to being like a characteristic, or they're a bad person. So you see, you know, you're in a situation where you're running late to a doctor's appointment and you really need to get there. It's a super important. And so you're speeding and you're kind of driving a little crazy, crazier than you normally would, because in your mind, this is so important for you to be there. But then on a different day, someone speeds by you driving, maybe not as crazy as you were, and they're an idiot or a jerk, right? We assume that somebody else, that their character is what's driving them to make the decisions. And our decisions are all based about external things that have nothing to do with us. And so that's one way that we can misdirect ourselves and not take responsibility for our own actions, but we can also misdirect ourselves and miss out on like great people who we just assume, again, it goes back to labeling people, but we just assume, you know, Janet's always late to work because she's lazy. And I'm late to work because my kids needed me to do something that was really important. So that's just one of the many ways. It's funny. I studied a lot of cons for this book. I've always been a fan of like old school con games and how people are swindled, you know, everything from the, there's a whole section on jam auctions, which is a wild, wild story. I won't get into all that, but, I love the three card Monty. In the three card Monty, if you watch it, it's presented as a game, but it is not a game that anyone can win. Every move and procedure has been carefully orchestrated to make sure you leave without your money. And it's presented as a game, but the guy running the game is a con man. It's a magician who studied these skills, but it's not being presented as a magic trick. It's being presented as just a game of chance. And for the longest time, I looked at that and I went, man, that guy is so bad for taking advantage of those people. He's misdirecting people, and he is. But also, you have to realize that every person who plays that game is allowing themselves to be misdirected by the idea of, I can earn something, or I can get something that I didn't earn. I can get rich quick, right? I can. And how many times in life do we find ourselves in these situations where we feel like, oh, we got the wool pulled over our eyes, but it was because we really wanted, you know, I really wanted to lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks, or I really wanted to, you know, get this promotion, so I did something that I shouldn't have done. Sometimes it's us wanting to rush to a different place in the future or to jump the line that allows us to be misdirected by someone else. And so, that chapter on misdirecting ourselves really gives you a lot of questions to ask and scenarios to kind of put yourself in to go like, where am I doing this? Where am I allowing myself to, you know, be taken advantage of, not just by someone else, but by myself, by thinking that, that I should have something that I didn't do anything to get.
Yeah. So if someone is jumping into this book, I find that sometimes when I read a book, sometimes it connects with me more, and sometimes it connects. I'm not ready for it. So yeah. Somebody that's about to order this book and they're going to dive into it, what do you think the best, like, mindset for them to kind of enter into to get the most out of the book would be?
Yeah, I would say go into this realizing you've been manipulated, and not in a way where it's like, oh, everyone's out to get me, but I would be foolish to write a book on manipulation without including, there's a whole chunk in the back about like putting the pieces back together. What do you do when you realize you've been taken advantage of? Or what do you do when you realize you've misdirected yourself? I would just be open to the questions that, you know, I think that one of the reasons that I've found that sometimes I don't want to change my mind about something is not only the cost that I'm going to have to pay to go, I was wrong, but I'm also going to have to take responsibility that if the way I was thinking was not loving other people or was putting other people in a bad situation, you know, it's hard sometimes to admit that you were wrong, because then you have to take responsibility for the fact that, man, I've thought incorrectly about someone. I have been labeling the people at work. I have been, you know, supporting a certain person that maybe wasn't on behalf of others, and I have to take responsibility for my role in that. So this book, I think some people will, it's an easy read. I think some people will breeze through it, but I also think some of the people that breeze through it are going to miss out on the benefit of pausing and asking. Like, I would rather people read a chapter and then ask the questions of themselves and go like, hey, I'm going to kind of meditate on this week and go, how am I, you know, when it comes to my neighborhood and my neighbors, how am I, you know, relating to them? Am I caring for them? Am I being open and allowing other people into my life? Like, where might I be misdirected? Where might I be misdirecting other people? And so, I would not put any pressure on yourself if you're entering this book to breeze through it. Or, you know, if you read a chapter and need to sit with it for a month, I think that's great. I will just tell you too, there is hope. there is hope for you. Like, and there's hope for all of us. Like, if you, if social media for you has been a, you know, there's some people that have had traumatic experiences with the way they've interacted with folks online. I want to tell you, there's hope. You can have great relationships and interactions beyond the ones that you've had. There's a chapter in here on the church. I had some significant hurt in the church, and this is why I didn't write this book for 10 years after that happened, because I needed to process it and go to therapy and work with it through friends and journal. And, I would just tell you, this book is a book not about they're all out to get us. This is a book about, wow, what kind of world could we make if we just choose wonder over misdirection, and it's available to everybody. So amazing. I hope people are encouraged when they start diving into some of this stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Amazing. So where's the best place for people to find this if they're ready to jump in?
You can order it online at Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Amazon, your local. If you got an indie bookstore that you love, you can go in there and they can be able to order it and get it to you. The best way right now, we're kind of rising up in the ranks on Amazon. And so if you order the book on Amazon, pre-order or order it when it's out, and that lets you leave a verified review, whatever you think about it, good or bad, I would just love for you to leave a review. Because that helps, that just helps more people get this book into their hands and notice it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining as always.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks for having me. And I love these conversations, man. I'm glad that you got them going, because, you know, it helps the rest of us not feel alone when you hear someone else go say words that you've thought and you go, Oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
We're in this together.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, we've done so many, you know, Look through the archives, and if people want to hear more about, you know, outside of this book, between conversations between the two of us, there's so much, you know, Previous episodes and things. So if anyone wants to dive in deeper, you can pretty easily find that stuff.